since I last saw you in Union Square, what's been happening since then?
Well, a lot's been happening lately, but before that happened, I ended up staying out in the streets for another 2 years. I did 3 winters out there in New York. This winter was just unbelievably, brutally cold. I started smoking a lot of crack besides shooting dope. I was shooting the crack for a while, then it became, I didn't have enough veins left to shoot the crack and shoot the dope. So I started smoking crack, and I got like out of control. And this winter was so cold. Like, I remember waking up mornings and there being like 3 inches of snow on top of my blanket, and I'm like, what the hell was wrong with this picture? I remember waking up one morning and my shoes were frozen, my socks were frozen, like literally like hard frozen. I had to run to McDonald's and go into the blow dryer and blow dry my feet. And it was just the accumulation of just being so worn down, so beat up, so cold. And this January 2nd of this year, it was the 10th anniversary of my father's death. And I don't know what changed. It was just I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And January 2nd, I decided I wanted to get out of there. I knew there was a chance for me to get out, but I just never took the initiative to do it. And in January, right after January 2nd, I decided enough was enough. I called this guy that I had met him in the city. He used to walk by me all the time when I was panhandling. And he was in recovery. He had about 2 years clean. And every time he walked by me, you know, he wouldn't give me money, but he'd buy me something to eat, get me a coffee, and ask me if I wanted to go to a meeting. And I was like, even some other time. And I still had his number. And I called him. I asked him if he could help me get in somewhere. I said I needed help, and I didn't want to do it no more. And it was unbelievable. He was there like an hour later. This time it was really, really hard kicking. I was kicking for like 11 days. I was so sick. I was 87 pounds when I walked in. I literally walked into the place with the clothes on my back. I had nothing left. I had no clothes, no weight on my body. No, my family was gone. Everything I ever had was gone. And I did the detox. I made it through. I stayed for 28 days in the rehab. This was upstate New York. And I had heard about this halfway house out on Staten Island, a women's halfway house. And one of their big, big things was helping women reunite with their children. And I still hadn't seen Sierra. It had been 3 years since I saw her. And I decided I wanted to get on the waiting list for the halfway house. And while I was in rehab, I got in touch with my family. I let them know what I was doing. And I asked my daughter's father. I had a long talk with my daughter's father. And I told him what I was doing. And he said, I don't know what it is, but there's something different about your voice this time. I think there is hope. And I'm going to let you see her when you get out of rehab. And it was like, I remember, like, I hung up the payphone. I was literally doing cartwheels down the hallway. Like, I was jumping up and down on my bed. And it was like the best news I've ever gotten. And I got out of rehab in January. No, actually, I got out in February. And I went and I saw her. And she didn't know I was coming. And I rang the doorbell. She answered the door, and she covered her mouth, and her eyes were like huge. And I just picked her up, and like no sound was even coming out of her. We were just like squeezing. And I see her every weekend, if not more now. I'm living in the halfway house. I have 6 months and 10 days clean today. Life is unbelievable. It's a totally, totally different place than I was 3 years ago, 2 years ago, even 6 months ago. The people I live with are like unbelievable support here. I have friends today. It's not running buddies. It's not get high partners. It's not, what are you going to do for me? You know, what you want me to do something for you, and you're going to get me back. It's not like about that at all. It's I'm with a bunch of women who are also recovering, some from dope, some from alcohol, some from coke, whatever it is. It doesn't matter what drug it is. It's the pain that we all felt. And we've like learned that there's a new way of life. I'm not starting my life over. I have a totally different life.
What was it about the film that you got from the film experience after viewing the film?
Wow. It made me sad. It made me really sad. Looking at it now, like, I don't want to say that I regret going through what I did, because I wouldn't appreciate today if I didn't have to go through that. But it just makes me sad that people, I didn't get it faster. Like, I think everything happens for a reason, and you know, God doesn't give us more than we can handle. And I had to go through so many different obstacles in life to get to where I am. But seeing it and seeing how in the grips I really, really was, and not even realizing it, like, just seeing me like lie down on a sidewalk and go to sleep and not think anything of it, like, it didn't even faze me how crazy that was. Being in the outside in the winter, like, so cold that, you know, you can't feel your fingers, you can't feel your toes, and just all I cared about was where the next bag was coming from. When I saw the film and saw how dirty my fingernails were and how many tracks I had on my hands and the cracks in the dry cracks in my knuckles, the dirt grudged in there, I vowed that I was never gonna have ugly hands again. And I take care of my nails. I take care of my hands. I get my nails done every week. And it feels good. It feels good being a girl. I think when you're in that, in the grips of that whole lifestyle, you're a very dark and dull person, you know. I didn't smile half as much as I smile now. Where I am today, it's so serene. Like, I never understood the meaning of that word. But, like, I never even, like, appreciated the green grass and the blue skies. And, you know, like, I sit outside at night now and I look at the stars. You know, I'm not sitting outside staring at, you know, the cars passing by and the people who might give me money. I'm actually, like, appreciating nature and everything. Like, there's so much life going on around, birds and the crickets and dogs and cats. You know, it's just little things that I never even, not that I didn't appreciate, I didn't even notice before. I said, like mother, like daughter. I was a cheerleader all through grammar school, all through high school, and she wanted to be like me, so she joined the cheering squad. And She had her first cheering practice the other night for this season, this upcoming season. I wasn't able to go because I had group that night, but she has practice tomorrow night. I'm going to go, and I get to see my little girl, the cheerleader. She is such a girly girl. I always say that, but she really is. She loves being a girl.
Heroin addiction. This will be the last question. For people that are watching this, and it could be people that are in recovery or in prevention, or doctors. What do you want to say to people that are watching, you know, that are on drugs or thinking about doing drugs? You know?
If you haven't ever tried it, don't. It's not something you can do once and not do again. I fell in love with heroin the first time I did it. It's such a numbing, amazing, wonderful, warm feeling that you get from it. But when you come down and you get sick, it is the worst, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. To be dope sick is like a nightmare. It's just, it's like hell. It's like living hell. And if you think it sounds like good to get, you know, like, I'll do a little dope and, you know, forget about the problems that I have and get away from whatever it is that I need to get away from. You're gonna do the dope, and the problems are still gonna be there. And the things you were running from are still gonna be there, and they're gonna be there worse, and they're gonna be there bigger. And now you got two problems. Now you got the problem you originally had, and you got a freaking dope habit. I can't tell you what to do, but for me, I wish I never tried it. Like I was saying, I'm glad I went through the things I went through to appreciate where I am today. But if you don't have to, by no means do. If you are on dope, or if you have a habit right now, that you don't have to live that way no more. I'm a totally different person than I was, and it's because I gave recovery a chance. The people you meet, the things you go through, like I appreciate going to the store and getting an iced latte right now. I appreciate that so much, because 2 years ago, if I had $3, you bet your ass I wasn't getting a coffee with it. And now I can take that $3 and I can go get a coffee. I can go and get my nails done and my hair done and have jewelry and not worry about if, you know, am I gonna sell this jewelry tomorrow. There's a better way, and to give it a chance.
Basically, you know, I gave my whole 20s away to dope, and you know, that's gone. I'm never getting that back, and that's that's 10 years out of a, you know, that's a third of my life, you know, gone, just poof, you know. And so now, when I think now, being clean and looking at, you know, I sit down and I think about, you know, what I want to do, you know, what's possible for me to do, and it's quite an amazing feeling, actually, to even think that I could do anything, you know. It's kind of empowering and motivating in a way. I want to, I want to pursue music, and I think I'm gonna do that now for probably the next year or two or so. I'm gonna give it a go, and here in New York, and you know, see if I can make anything happen. And I'm probably gonna, I'm definitely going back to school. The only question is a matter of when.
How far did you get with your education?
I did a year in college, you know, in community college. So, you know, I have some college credits, but
if you were to go to college, what would be some of the...
Yeah, see, what I want, you know, I've always wanted to be a teacher, you know, so that's what I'm gonna do, you know.
In what subject would it be? Art, history?
Either history, you know, like, or English, you know, or in a junior high school type level, or, you know, I would really like to teach, like, you know, third or fourth grade.
What's motivating? What's keeping you awake?
Well, you know, meetings play a big part, you know, to be honest. They play a tremendous role in not just taking up time, but it's, you know, it's extremely constructive time. And I, you know, I go to an outpatient program, you know, 4 days a week, and I meet a lot of people there who are trying to stop using, and they don't go to, they don't go to meetings per se. And I just always feel like they're really missing out when I hear people say that, because, and you know, I just, you know, want to say to anybody that, you know, that's thinking about, you know, recovery or whatnot, that that I can't stress enough what a role that it's played in my recovery so far. It's you know, you really can't beat walking into a room, you know, and into a room full of people who are all going through the exact same thing that you are, you know, and you know, at times it's invaluable, you know, and so between like my treatment and my outpatient and meetings, you know, I've been recording a bunch of my songs. You know, that pretty much, you know, takes it up. Whatever other time that I have, you know, to kill is usually spent, you know, I spend time in books, the reading, you know, at a bookstore or, you know, that's pretty much it, you know. I don't really have, you know, a lot of time since I'm traveling back and forth, you know, between New Jersey and the city every day. You know, I get here in the morning and I just go right to my clinic, and then I have an hour or so to kill, so I might go read a magazine or two, and then I go to my outpatient program, and that's 2 hours, and then I go to a meeting directly after that, and that's another 2 hours practically, and, you know, by then I have an hour left before I go home, so, you know, I'll kill that, you know, in the guitar store or whatever, you know. But basically, you know, it is a key thing is staying busy, and, you know, I can't find myself somewhere, especially here in New York, with nothing to do, you know. That's like a recipe for disaster, and I haven't really crossed that road, and I don't intend to, so that's what I'm doing. The music and my recovery is keeping me plenty busy. I want to tell you, you know, that I'm... In one sense, I'm happier than I've been in a long time. You know, my life right now is, you know, it's light years away, you know, from anything that you saw in the movie. You know, and I can walk around now, and you know, I don't have to, you know, I don't walk around staring at the ground, and I don't, you know, I can hold my head up now, and you know, I can look people in the eye, you know, and it's just little things like that, you know, that come back to you after a long time. But when you know, they seem really important now, you know, because they were gone for so long. And it really is. It's you know, if getting strung out on dope was the worst thing that ever happened to me, then getting clean from it is the best. I've got my family back. My relationship with my twin brother is, you know, we're as close as we've been since we were 5 years old, you know. And he's helped me out so much, you know, in the last couple of months, you know. And I love my family so much. I got that right there is priceless, you know. You know, just, you know, getting to see, you know, getting to see Shia, you know, become the beautiful person that she is priceless. You know, it's priceless to watch that process, you know, and to go through it, you know, to try to be working towards that, you know, myself. And I got to see my stepdaughter again, and I mean, that's priceless, you know. I got a hug from my stepdaughter, and she told me, I love you, Poppy. And I wouldn't trade that for all the dope, and, you know. You know, in a sense, it's kind of like a dream come true, because I can't tell you how many nights me and her cried ourselves to sleep on the sidewalk, thinking, you know, talking about our, when you get clean, it's amazing. It's just a whole world that opens up. Because if you saw anything in the movie, you probably, you know, I'm just telling you from how the life was. It's extremely narrow in its existence. You know what I mean? It's a very narrow, you know, single-minded, one-dimensional existence. You know, it's waking up sick. It's getting a wake up. It's panhandling all day. You know, and then you get more dope, and then as soon as then you go shoot the dope, and then you go panhandle more. You know, and that's all it is. You know, and that's life for a junkie. You know, they say a junkie spends half his life, you know, sick, and the other half, you know, in jail. You know, and that's all life was. You know, for us, it was, you know, begging for money to shoot dope, and then shooting dope, and then begging for more money to shoot dope. You know, and to go from that into what I have now. Now I have, you know. I have hope now. I have promise. I have expectation. I have goals that I'm working on, you know. And recovery has just opened up a whole. You know, it's opened up a whole new world for me. I feel new again, you know. I feel human again, because it's a very unhuman feeling when you're on the street and you're living like that, and you know, it's very inhuman. But now I feel human again. I feel like a normal person, sort of. You know, on the street it was, you know, it seemed hopeless. You know, it really did, you know, and a lot of people get resigned to that. You know, a lot of people in that situation, you know, will resign themselves to the fact that this is it, you know, or they'll become content with the situation. And we never became content with it, you know. We were never, you know, we were stuck in the rut, but we were never content with it, you know. We were never like, okay, this is our lot, and, you know, let's make the best of it, you know. That wasn't the way that we look at it, but people do, and you know, you can get stuck in that, and I see it happen. You know, I've seen guys out there that have been out there and doing the same thing, you know, that I did for, you know, 2.5-3 years, that, you know, they've been doing it for 30 years, you know, and, you know, out here, you know, Shy was all that I had out there. We knew a lot of people, but we didn't really have any friends, you know. We knew a lot of people, but they'd all sell you out for a bag, you know. You can't really have friends on the street, you know. And so in that sense, you know, the what's the difference between your family and a bunch of junkies, you know. I'm getting a chance right now to you know, to live with my father and my sister and her and my little niece and nephew, which is unbelievable. But also I'm getting a chance to connect with my brothers again. Like, I'm getting it's a once in a lifetime chance, because even if I had gone home and they still had their place, I would see them every once in a while. But you know, it's almost like when we were kids again, you know, being together, you know, at home. It's been an extremely rich and rewarding experience so far, family-wise. You know, I got to know my brothers again, and they got to know me again, and you know, the real me, because I can't stress enough how that just, you know, what the, you know, what I was, or how, you know, how I acted, or you know, the stress that me and her were under out there was, you know, I mean, you can imagine, you know, the kind of stress that, you know, like that a lifestyle would, like that would cause, and you know, just the whole lifestyle, and you know, it just it turns, and the lifestyle and the dope itself just turns people in, you know, it reduces people to the you know, to the most, to their lowest common denominator, you know. It's, you know, and, that's what it does. And it does that to everybody. It does that to everybody that goes out there and gets in that situation. And that wasn't me. That was the product of my addiction and the circumstances of my lifestyle. You know, it created the person that you saw in the movie, you know. But that wasn't me, you know. I can't, you know, it, like I said, you know, just to watch it, well, not to actually watch it, but to hear people that have watched it, you know, tell me about some of the things that I did, it just makes me sick. Don't even bother trying it. I just want, you know, I couldn't stress enough that it's, you know, it will suck you in. You know, there's no doubt about that. It happens to everybody. Every one of the junkies that we were out there with started out sniffing a bag on a weekend. You know what I mean? And nobody starts out, you know, expecting to, you know, end up on the street, you know, shooting a bundle a day, you know, living on the sidewalk. Nobody starts it with that expectation, but it happens, and it happens to almost everybody, you know. So I just want to say, if you think that you you want to, you know, just do it a little bit on the weekends, that you know, that's not how it works. And to anybody that's thinking about getting clean, you know, I just want to, you know, show you that you can, you know, you can do it. You know, it's very possible. And it'll no matter which way you do it, if you go the way of detox and a rehab, you know, or if you get on a methadone clinic for a little while, you know, either way, I can't tell you how. I can't the change is just so great. I can't even really express it in words, you know. It's an amazing experience. And I'm grateful for the chance to live it every day.
Last time I saw you was in Union Square Park. I might have seen you a few times after, but since we stopped videotaping the documentary, what have you been up to?
Been clean for 8 months now of everything. I don't even smoke weed. I don't do anything right now. I go to group meetings. I go to a therapist once a week. Currently looking for a job. I need to start doing something. Most of my free time, I guess since Union Square, I took a road trip and I went back out to my hometown in California. I stayed there for a while, then I went to Las Vegas and went to a bunch of states, you know, on my way back. I lived in North Carolina for a couple months during the winter last year. And I actually ended up back in Union Square momentarily. And decided I just didn't want to be there. It just wasn't the place for me anymore. And I had already pretty much stopped using. I started cutting off people that I knew weren't helpful to trying to come clean, basically. I involved myself with other people. I started meeting new people. I got involved with a girl for a while, and I just decided, you know, it just came to that point where it had to stop, you know. Even just for myself, basically, you know, because I still like meeting new people and everything. I still had this demon, and you know, it didn't work too well together, being with people that weren't on the same, you know, drug, I guess. You know, people still smoke pot and whatever, that you know, but heroin's kind of a big no-no, I guess, everywhere you go. People are, you know, they're freaked out when they hear that, like, oh, you're a heroin addict, you shoot up, you're a piece of shit, basically. You know, and I had to kind of, I wanted to lose that image, I guess. I didn't want people to look at me like a piece of shit. I didn't want to think of myself as a piece of shit, because, you know, that, sleeping in the park, you know, you can't think much better of yourself. You know, so I had to just make the commitment to myself. I didn't go through methadone or anything. I actually ended up getting I went to a friend's house, and they kind of locked me into the house. They locked me inside for like 3 weeks, and I was serious. Like, I slept on the couch in the living room every day. I mean, they went out to get me food. They wouldn't let me leave. And I kind of sat there, and I just, like, played video games, like, all day, watched movies, and I kind of went a little crazy. You know, actually, part of what helped me was LSD, which is a little crazy, too, but it did help me when I was going through some of the real painful part of withdrawing. And I knew I wasn't able to sleep anyways. I kind of just got tossed another way. But then in the end, you know, like 3 weeks went by, and I rolled off. I find more therapy by myself with artwork and stuff, trying to be more constructive. You know, I go to the groups, you know, because it's good for me and stuff, and, you know, and I have a good relationship with the directors of the groups, you know, who I can talk to. But it's funny because, you know, we'll cover different drugs each session and stuff, but I think they turn to me more for questions because they know I've just been around the block, like, and I just know, I know my drugs, you know, I know what they do to you, and I've lived through it. So, you know, most of the group, I get a lot of questions, you know, people, you know, there's drug addicts in there that really, you know, were on some mild stuff compared to what I was doing. You know, what I had mixed around and everything, and so, you know, that's kind of, it's funny, but it's, you know, it's good to talk, I guess, you know.
How is it with a single therapist?
Well, the single therapist, I guess I'm more open to him or something. You know, I talk about more issues that maybe led me towards drug use. You know, even just what's going on right now, I feel like when I'm in a group, you know, talking to a bunch of people that you're not going to get many good answers from doesn't really help me, like, when I explain my situation. You know, for the most part, I'm in groups. The groups, you know, people, they at least have a place to live. You know, they have family, whatever, for the most part. And I'm still kind of way out in left field as far as that goes right now. I don't have family. You know, that's been an issue I've had to work with for years now. You know, and I don't have a steady place to live, which makes it another thing, because I can't just go to group and then come out and rest my head, you know, like everyone else does. Right now, I'm trying to get back in touch a lot with my artistic side, I guess. I've been making clothes. I made a couple pairs of pants just from scratch material. Hand sewing took like days at a time. You know, I'm trying to make possibly a streetwear company. I like to call it Stealth Streetwear. And it's going to be just some like rugged clothing that, you know, it's the lasts and just like the necessities, like, I, you know, so I put together some pants and even some girls' skirts type things, you know, my girlfriend.
Yeah, do you have some of the samples, or you have?
Yeah, it's actually at the house I can't get to right now. you know, I'd like to start a life, basically. You know, I'd like to have my own place. I'd like to be, you know, I don't like the idea of working. I'm not the 9-to-5 kind of guy, but I got to do it because, you know, I need to have responsibilities, I guess. You know, I'd like to take on some responsibilities. And, you know, I got a lot on my mind. I'm kind of, you know, I'm in this, like, stage where I'm kind of like fantasizing about, you know, oh, it'd be really nice to, you know, have a nice place and, you know, have, you know, some, you know, really good family. I'd like to have my own kids and, you know, bring up a good family and be a good father, you know, because I've been through so many downfalls. At least I know that if I get my shit together, I could definitely keep my family together.
What do you want to say to some people that are looking at this?
Don't do drugs. No, I don't, there's a lot of things I could say, you know, for people who have seen the movie and stuff. You know, it was a hard time. Everyone has their hard times. Some people don't know how to handle it as well, but, you know, piece of advice from experience, heroin is not something you want to get involved with. You know, it's just, it doesn't help anything. You know, for the other people that were in the film too, you know, I hope everyone's doing better. You know, life isn't, you know, life is short right now. You know, you never know what's going to happen, and it just doesn't help to play with your life, you know, play life and death. You know, it's, got to find some motivation, you know, something better in life. I don't know. I just hope the best of luck to people, you know, and you know, good luck. You know, you got to be careful. You know, for those who want to try it, watch the movie again. see where your life could go. You know, you might not end up in any better of a situation. For the people that are already on drugs and maybe going through the same shit, you know, I feel your pain. Been there, done that, you know, trying to get over it. And that's what everyone, I think, has to do. You know, like, you have to find a point to stop, basically, you know. Find something to, you know, to distract yourself, you know. I don't know. You know, it's all fun and games until you get hurt or something goes really bad. You know, we all went through that. And believe me, in the end, you're going to get hurt. You're going to regret something if you already don't. I know I have a lot of regrets. You know, but you can't really live on regret. I'm just trying to move forward now. I think that's the key, is just moving forward.
You can feel it, actually, like the streets. It actually, like, I feel it for myself. I don't know about other people, but I actually feel it wearing my fucking soul thin, man. The things that I do out here and just what I fucking subject myself to, man. I feel it, man. I really feel it. It's really starting to fucking bother me, man. I'm ready to run. I'm thinking, I'll fucking go down south and go to California, but I know I bring myself wherever the fuck I go, man. Nothing will change.
Day at a time, you know, I keep on telling myself I gotta get in a detox, I gotta get into a program, but if I don't, it's gonna be too late. I'm either gonna be dead, or I'm gonna be in prison. It's gonna be one or the other. You don't win. You don't win on the path that I'm going. Keep on doing people wrong, eventually wrong gets done to you.
Since I left videotape you, what's been happening?
Up until past 6 months, really same old, same old. I had been fighting for a long time with my mother, who's pretty much my only family, who wanted me to go into rehab detox. I'm not against that, but inevitably you go into three-quarter housing, and a lot of people there mandated they don't want to be there. It's not what it's cracked up to be. And I didn't want to do that. And I wasn't trying to cop out and make my life easy, but I knew that really wasn't for me. I knew what I needed to do was get a job. Try to get a job when you're homeless. And you don't have a phone, why are you wearing the same clothes? I lucked into a situation where a friend of mine from when I was really small opened up a brand new restaurant, and I went over and I said, listen, I don't care what you want me to do, I'm in a bad situation, I'll lick the floor with my tongue, I don't care, I need a job. And he said, don't worry, you got a job. And knock wood, I've been working as personal assistant to him since May. And so I've been working. You know, they recently found out that people, one of the best things for people with depression is working, because it keeps your mind moving. And I may still be whatever, but I'm occupied. Last couple of weeks have not been good for me. But if you can get a job when you have nothing, then nothing's insurmountable. And I've done that, so.
At the end of the film, you had went into detox and
yeah.
A few times, you know?
Yeah.
And did your thing.
Yeah.
And now you're back out here. What?
I'm back out here not for any other reason than I had an apartment. And I had a choice of living on my own, which was the smart thing to do, or living with somebody who I thought was a normal, stable person. I took the normal, stable person to share costs and got ripped off and abused. And she's living there, I'm not, and today is Saturday. I can't even talk to the owner until Monday. So until Monday, I'm stuck out here. It's not like I'm out here. I don't really want to come back out here again. But what am I going to do? I've really had enough of being out here, and I can't tell you how much I like working. It really, really, I love working. I'm a workaholic, and I just love being occupied. If I could work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, I would. I actually had to have my boss cut my hours down because I was working too much. I wrong person. This person was supposed to pay me back and brought up something that happened 3 years ago as the reason for not paying me back, and that was a little strange, but you move on. And also I've been speaking to my dad, who he had his 70th birthday, and I sent him a card, no love in it, just congratulations, milestone, and he called me up the next day as if nothing had happened between us, and we've been talking since. I'm leery of talking to him because you get into trouble with him. He's like a spider. And he does something nice and gets you wrapped up and bad things happen. Can I talk about the movie?
Well, what do you think of the film?
Good. Bravo. I mean, it's hard for me to say anything. I mean, it's my life, you know. Tell you a couple of weird things. First of all, from the reviews I read, made me out to be the biggest male whore I've ever heard of. And I know male whores. I'm not. One reviewer got it wrong, totally wrong. Ron, who's straight, is forced to blow men for $40. Not the other way around. But no, I'm not a male whore. I may be a slut, but I'm not a male whore. And then the day it came out, my mother, who never reads the Post or the news, I call her up and she's quoting from the Post and the news, and I'm like, Mom, it's not right. But I couldn't explain that to her. My father, who I haven't spoken to during all this, apparently read it. And a friend of mine also read it, and they were like, how many Rons are there in New York? How many Rons are there who are junkies? And they assumed correctly that it was me. And my father doesn't care that I'm gay or anything like that, and he's been cool. And the funny thing was, I went to the screening, and I the opening night, and I really, I don't even know if you know I was there. I was there in the back row. And I a lot of things were going on that day, and I was actually at work. But I snuck in for the last 15 minutes. And after the end of the movie, I had a run down to the bathroom, and there was a kid who was waiting for a stall, and I know what he wanted to do in the bathroom. And he heard my voice. He goes, "You sound familiar, you know, you sound like, were you in that movie?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Oh, wow, you know, I need to use the bathroom. I gotta, you know." And I'm like, "Yeah, great."
Oh, good.
So, several people have come up to me and have seen me, and so,
weird.
I got into the movie by saying, "You're not gonna believe this, but I'm in this movie." And they go, "Yes, you are." They let me in. Can't do that many times, but I mean, like I said, you know, it's too close to home for me to have an objective opinion, but for what it is, yeah. And whoever was the reviewer who said we're a bunch of egotistical, self-absorbed, whatever, I mean, look at yourself. Honestly, I mean, you know, everybody to some extent is, and, you know, I don't know who you are or whatever, but, you know, you put yourself first. If you put others before you, you can't give of yourself. And you know what? I am number one for me. For a long time, I didn't care about me. And other people came first. I'd give you the shirt off my back. Look where it got me. Nowhere. So I got to look out for me before I can give myself. And I have to learn boundaries. You know, I can't allow people who don't want to help themselves pull me down. I'm a giving kind of guy, and since I know a lot of people out here and stuff, it's you know, sorry, I can't do anything for you if you don't want to help yourself. But, you know, I'll still do what I can for people.
What about your habit, Ron? What's happening with your habit?
When I got really, really down, very, very low, and my plan was, when I started working, to lock myself in my house and just do my meth for a week. Well, the people I was living with, if Satan is a female and has a cis twin sister, I was living with them, and hard to try and detox yourself in a small, confined space with two people who are going 24/7 doing everything you could possibly imagine. And I've kept it down, maintained it very, very low, and that's where it is right now. It's not, I never was a person with living out of control, but I keep it at a level that just keeps me from getting sick.
How many bags a day are you using?
2 to 3. But do I do this for getting high? I don't get high. I just do it so I don't get sick. But there's no pleasure, there's no joy. I went into a lot of detoxes just waiting to get out of there so I could get high. I don't know if I'm going to go do a detox to clean up, but I don't plan to come out and want to. I have no desire to do this again. I'm just doing it because I need to do it right now. But probably what I'm going to do is just, when I get back in, do my meth. The last 4 years, it's hard to get off a merry-go-round when you're feeling miserable about yourself, and, you know, it all feeds on itself, drugs and all that. And I've got the job. I want to have a nice little life, and I am not going to let myself down or others down this time. And so I plan to keep moving forward. There's people out here who've had lives much worse than me, much worse than me. You can either sit there and feel sorry for yourself, or, you know, rise above it. And you know, your mom's a junkie, whatever, but that doesn't mean you have to become one. Get over it. Move on. I had a shitty period, okay? I'd been there, done it, saw it. Enough. I'm looking nicer. He caught me on the day that I haven't shaved, okay? And I didn't shave because all my stuff is locked in this apartment. But normally I'm nicely shaved, and I don't look so ratty as I do today.
What do you see trying to do with yourself in the next year or two, Ron?
First, I don't really look that far down the road right now. I just work. Work. Save money. I sort of have a relationship. I'm not a relationship person. I really don't like relationships. But I sort of have somebody who really likes me. And actually, I like this person. And so that's nice. That may progress. We'll see how that goes.
What do you want to say to someone that's either on drugs or, you know, on heroin?
The funny thing is, you know, whenever you tell somebody not to do something, they're going to do it. Don't smoke, they're going to smoke. They're going to do it. You're going to do it once, you're not going to get addicted. From somebody who's done it, don't do it. You want to try it, try it. But the inevitable result, unless you're a multi-millionaire, you're going to be out here, and you can be a lot worse than I was. I know millionaires have lost everything. It's pointless. And I'm not an advocate. I'm not a saint, and I'm not somebody who's going to sit there and say, don't ever do something. But, you know, it's a physical thing. It's going to get into your body, and you're going to need it. And you can't live without it. And the joy will quickly fade. You will lose your family, your friends, your job, and everything else you hold near and dear to yourself. And it will be very, very hard to kick the habit and to get your self-esteem and yourself back. But if you are doing it, reach out. Don't be afraid. Do something. Go to somebody you trust. If you don't trust anybody, I think there are numbers you can call. I'm sure there's numbers. If you don't believe in AA, it's not the only way. There's other things. You know, get friends and family. Go to a shrink. Get clean. You deserve it, you know? Everybody deserves a shot in life. I deserve one. Take care. Be good.
Since the last time I spoken to you, what has been happening?
I've been in jail. I was in jail, went to jail for 7 months for a parole violation. Came home for 17 days, went back in for another parole violation, and I'm here now. I've been back in jail for 44 days. I've been on T-block status that whole time because I got caught with a needle in my pocket, which I didn't know was there when I was in the jail, so... They actually rearrested me on it and wanted to charge me with a felony. Took me to the third precinct, and luckily my dad used to work there, and, you know, he talked to a few people, and they ended up not rearresting me for it. I got really lucky, but they still put me on T-block status, so I'm locked to myself for 45 days. I get off tomorrow, and then maybe I'll start programming in here until I go back upstate, and then I'll come home.
Define programming to me.
You know, I'll go on like either AA or you know, some type of drug program.
And give me some details about the drug program and what it is.
Well, I'm not really sure what it's like. I think, you know, I'll probably just be going to AA meetings or NA meetings, you know, and just trying to, you know, keep my mind on doing the right thing when I get out. You know, I don't want to come back anymore.
What would be something that would make you absolutely stop doing... It's now a 10-year cycle of in and out of jails and psychiatric hospitals. What do you think what would happen? What would be something you'd want to change?
I'm just... You know, I'm tired. Tired of this. You know, I'm 26 years old and it's been my life for the past 10 years and I just, you know, it's not fun. You know, it's just sick of it, you know. I just don't want to do it anymore. I'd rather be dead than have to do this for the rest of my life.
I was told recently you were found in a situation in Union Square where you OD'd, and there was a suicide note and all that. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, I had enough and just, I don't know, I got out of jail, just things were still really bad, and I don't know, I just kind of lost it, for a little bit, and I just, I don't know, I just got bad, got real bad, didn't want to deal with anything anymore. But here I am in jail again. I mean, I just can't stand it. You know, it's driving me nuts. It drove me to the point where I just didn't want to have to deal with anything anymore.
When you come out, while you're in there, is there anything you might be looking into, like possibly school or getting involved with some educational programs or work programs?
I think I need to work a lot of hours and where I can get good money. Something that's you know, that I feel I'm gaining from, and, you know, I just gotta...
You have 1 minute left.
You still there?
Hey, this is gonna hang up, though. I'm pressed. The guards telling me I gotta go back to my cell because I'm on key block status.
Okay.
They let me make a special phone call, so...
Final question. What do you want to say to people that are listening?
That are listening to you?
To you.
What, people that don't use drugs, you mean?
Yeah.
Don't use them. Because you might end up in and out of jail. You might end up trying to kill yourself. You might end up living on the streets. Just a lot of things that happen to me. No, it's just not worth it. But this is going to hang up, Steve.
Okay, James.
All right, hey, take it easy, man.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Tina. I'm James's mom. James is the oldest of my 9 children. His dad and I have been married for 29 years. The rest of our children all live home. James has been in and out of the house over the past 27 years, depending on whether or not he's been incarcerated or homeless. In between his periods with addiction, we've always allowed him back in the house. When he starts having trouble with drugs again, of course he can't stay home because that's when the problems start with the other kids. He'll steal from them to support his habit, unfortunately. But my kids are always very receptive to him. They look at James as somebody with an illness, with periods of health in between. They're just very understanding kids, and they all love him. James can be a lot of fun. He's got a good heart. He's a very giving kid. He's just got a lot of obvious problems from drug addiction and from his medical problems, I guess, include the clinical hyperactivity and whatever goes along with that. I think the first time I knew he was doing heroin, he was 18 years old, and he called me one night from Union Square Park, and he was very messed up and crying. And he said, you know, he was hinting, "You don't know what I've been doing, Mom. You don't know what my life is like." And I just asked him flat out, "Are you doing heroin?" And he said, "Yes, but I've only done it a couple of times." But of course, that was not true. I don't know how it got started. I know it got started in the park. There's a project in the city called Streetworks, and they've been involved with James since he's 16 years old, and they knew of his heroin addiction way before that. So, you know, apparently he had been involved in heroin way before we knew, but he wasn't living home, so we really, there weren't many telltale signs here. And when we did see him stoned on heroin, it was very hard to tell because he was never falling stoned out, zonked out when we saw him. I think he was pretty much shooting heroin just to get straight at that point. When I saw the film that Steve made, I noticed that James was one of the few people in the film that seemed really stoned out on heroin. And that's kind of how we saw him. He would shoot up and just seem normal. Just a very sad existence.
Once you got the phone call from him in the city, in Union Square, that he was sick and he wasn't feeling well, and he came forward and told you the truth about what he's doing, what happened after that? What was the journey from there?
Well, first of all, I have to say there were many, many hospitalizations before that that revolved basically around alcohol, but we knew there were drugs involved. We just didn't know what the extent was. And there were also many arrests up until that point. Usually the arrests were drug-related, possession or something like that, but there were never any violent crimes. And after that, he was already living homeless. We were often getting calls from police that they had found him intoxicated or stoned or whatever, laying asleep in Penn Station or somewhere in the park. He would end up in hospitals in the city that the police took him to. He had overdosed so many times, I mean, more times than I could even begin to count, and been in jails more times than I could begin to count. The day after his high school graduation, he went to Nassau County Jail for the first time for any length of time. And I don't even remember what the charge was, because there were just so many times after that. When he got out, he was on parole, and that's where the cycle began. Every time he got out of jail on parole, he violated parole by either not reporting to parole or by using drugs, having dirty urines, and then they would send him back. And that cycle has just continued over the past 9 years. He usually goes into jail not clean. They detox him on methadone, and depending on how much he's using when he goes in there, will determine how long he's going to be on the methadone. This last time he went in, they kept him on the methadone for a good 5 months before they weaned him off, and then he was clean. He came out, he was in there this time almost a year, and the day he came out, we took him immediately to a psychiatrist directly from the jail. He was given a prescription for Paxil and Neurontin, and this was in hopes of getting him stabilized enough to cooperate with a medication program. And he went to an AA meeting that night, and from the AA meeting, he met some friends. His intentions were good. He just wanted to say hello to some people, and he ended up in Manhattan, and he ended up shooting heroin that night. And
when did this happen?
This was about a month ago, sometime in June, and he stayed in the city for a couple of days. We didn't hear from him, and then I believe a week later, he just felt so hopeless. He had gotten out with all good intentions of doing well, and he wrote a letter, a suicide letter. And he shot up 5 bags of heroin, and he went into cardiac arrest. They took him into Mount Sinai Hospital.
Where was he found?
Somewhere in the park, I believe. I don't even know. I don't even think he knows. And they had him on life support. He has hepatitis C. He was basically told he was in liver failure, which he took as a death sentence. And he just ripped everything out of his arms when he was able to, left the hospital, and 2 days later we found him here at our home, asleep on one of the floors. And you know, my husband and I said, oh, you know, here he is, we're going to deal with him when he wakes up. And before he even woke up, the parole board was here. Somebody must have told them he was here. They came and they grabbed him. They took him to the Nassau County Jail, and that's where he is now. He had a hearing a week ago, and rather than release him and allow us to put him in drug treatment, they've decided to make him serve the rest of his sentence out, which ends in November. And he'll be released in November with no parole, so he'll be completely free. With no one to answer to, and that'll be the first time he's been completely free in probably over 10 years. And, you know, it's up to him then, which the past history has shown that leaving it up to him is not a good idea. So, you know, Here we are again. This could happen to anybody. James comes from a really loving family with, you know, an intact family. His father and I have a great marriage, and he's, you know, he had a really, really nice childhood. The drugs were available to him in this town. He grew up in a really nice town. This is a town where kids generally go to Ivy League schools, and parents here think it won't happen to their kids. And, you know, we had to put up with a lot of finger pointing and judgments against us that it must have been something we did. And to those parents, I say, could have been you, because it really was not anything we did. It was, I mean, partially, I suppose, there was the hyperactivity that played against us, and maybe their children don't have that, but I know a lot of kids in this town that got into drugs that didn't have any sort of medical problems just because it was there, it was attractive, and the money was available. I think parents in general have to just be aware of this problem, and if it's not affecting your child, you still need to take responsibility for the laws and the way they affect your children, because they will affect you and your family and your children one way or another. If it's not through your taxes being spent on kids like this incorrectly, you know, the way your taxes are spent, it does not help these kids. The system stinks. There's just got to be more involvement, I think, first in the schools with parents of healthy kids trying to keep their kids healthy. And, you know, and parents of healthy kids need to get involved helping the parents of kids that have problems like this. Because the parents of kids like this really, they don't have the resources. Usually financially the resources aren't there, because it's very expensive to treat kids like this. But even the you know, just the social service resources, they don't know what's available to them. And even the social workers in the school are, they fall very far short when it comes to that. So, you know, I would just say people need to be more involved. And they have to find out how to do it. You know, they have to find out how to get involved. The programs that are available right now really do fall short. Yeah, and these other parents, you know, these other parents of kids in this film, my feeling is they probably don't want to get involved because they're ashamed, embarrassed. And I was for a very long time right there with them. But I'm so beyond that right now. I know beyond any shadow of a doubt that I have done everything humanly possible, for me anyway. I've done the best I could to get this child help. Child, he's a man. I've done everything I can to get him help, and I've done everything I can to help the kids like him that I know. And I'm not embarrassed or ashamed. I just really feel at this point it's almost a mission that I want to do what I can to help change the laws and just change the way these kids are handled, because I have the time and the energy to do it now. I'm over that period of the 13 to 19 year old stage where it traumatizes my life. I can get out there and do things now. And, you know, and I don't feel guilty. I don't feel like I've played a role in this. And that's, I guess, why I'm able to come on the film. You know, I know other members of my family aren't so forthcoming, but everybody's got their own way of handling things. I have no problem talking on film. I have no problem talking to my son on film or having him talk on film. I really feel that there's a need for this kind of thing. And, you know, hopefully other parents will feel more free to come forward after this.